Welcome to this week's Market Commentator podcast, MoneyWeb's series of interviews with investment professionals. Our guest this week is Tsepo Modiba, who is Chief Investment Officer at Seriti Asset Management. Tsepo, it's good to have you with us. Thanks for your time. We do live in very volatile times for global financial markets. Does the volatility and uncertainty in markets call for extraordinary investment processes, extraordinary, or will Seriti be sticking to its established investment processes?
Thanks for having me on the show. I think ultimately, I read an interesting quote the other day. I'll start with that. And it said, at times like this, you probably, what you want to do is go take a cold shower.
Just calm down.
Come back and do absolutely nothing. And I think that's really where we find ourselves right now. I think if you look at markets since Brexit, which will be the key driver of markets over the last couple of weeks, whether you're talking currency markets, bond markets, or equities, there's been a really significant shoot up in volatility. But a lot of stocks have pretty much gone nowhere. So they've gone up and down, but at the end of it are quite flat. I think the gist of it is no one really knows the end implications of Brexit. So it's really difficult then to take definitive investment decisions based on stuff that you don't really know.
Absolutely. And when it is volatile like this, do you think it's best then to stick to what you have already established as your investment philosophy, as your investment process, or is there opportunity to make money off these short-term moves?
Sure. I think ultimately from an investment perspective, what you want to do is stick to your process. The change in your process shouldn't be because of short-term market dynamics. It's hopefully a little bit more thought through than that. So certainly I'd encourage we're certainly sticking to our guns from a process perspective, and I'd encourage investors to do the same. I think if you do that, it then highlights numerous opportunities that come about as the market loses its mind.
Have you changed any of the holdings in your portfolios subsequent to Brexit?
We've introduced one or two stocks that thankfully the market in our mind then became quite cheap. But in terms of the core holdings, I mean, our key focus is on global markets. We do have positions within the UK itself. Some of those got absolutely hammered. Not happy to say that, but nonetheless sold off quite dramatically.
But you're holding on to them.
We're holding on to them because we don't think anything fundamentally has changed with the businesses yet. Sure, cost of capital within the UK has increased as risks have increased. But we still think that there's material upside in some of these holdings. I mean, to give you a sense of what's sold off dramatically in the UK, the banks, which we don't have any of, sold off quite a bit, which makes sense given that they're a leverage on the broader economy. And I think consensus is that if nothing else, this is going to lead to an economic slowdown. Specifically because of the uncertainty. So businesses are likely to push out capital spending, which of course will have a big drag on the underlying economy. So it makes sense that the banks would have sold off. The housing market or housing development markets also sold off quite dramatically. And again, there the thesis is that quite a bit of what's held up the UK and specifically London property, residential property, has been foreign investments. Either the Russians, who this won't affect, to be fair, maybe even makes it a little bit cheaper, or European buyers. And I guess given that a key driver of the vote was immigration, What does that mean in terms of the ability or the demand from a foreign investor perspective? So I think that those two have been the big industries that have sold off quite dramatically. We like a business in the UK called Drax. It's a utilities business that's focused on the renewable energy side of things. And there, a lot of their regulation is European regulation. And again, all this, I keep saying the same word, uncertainty. Yeah. And I think that's really why we're seeing quite a bit of volatility.
And the stocks that you added to your portfolio subsequent to Brexit, can you shed some light on those?
Sure. So we've added some positions, actually not necessarily in the UK itself. You know, the rest of the world took a significant dip as well on the back of the news. Some positions within the US have become interesting. So we've added a financial services business in the US that we think is well positioned to do well going forward. And we thought was probably, you know, about fair value, but it's pulled back 10% since the news. So very happy to acquire it at these sort of prices.
Locally, would you say there are increasingly more or increasingly less buying opportunities?
Sure. Look, South African markets, it's a tricky one, because if you look at it from a top-down perspective, I think there's a fair argument to say South Africa is probably about fairly valued. Not expensive by no means, but certainly not a dripping roast for investors to, you know, fill their boots. I think the short-term volatility is certainly introducing some opportunities to acquire businesses. I mean, if you look at some of the businesses that have sold off dramatically over the last couple of years, Richemont, case in point, has followed suit the luxury theme around the world, which seems to have softened and investors have bailed out there. So businesses like that, we think, probably present decent value. And again, opportunities, this volatility is probably an opportunity for you to pick up stocks that you may not have before.
And looking at countries across the world, I was reading on your website that you start by identifying countries that you think will perform well in terms of the building block of your investment process, and then off the back of that, select companies in those countries that you think will perform well. Global growth, as we know, is constrained and quite patchy, and particularly now with Brexit, there is a lot of concern that an already weak European Union and UK economy will stagger even further, perhaps the EU more seriously than the UK. Yeah. Which are the countries then that Sariti thinks are likely to perform well in the next, let's say, 12 to 18 months?
I think, look, oh yeah, the 12 months, that's tricky. Look, I think from an investment thesis perspective, the primary driver of our decision is valuations, not necessarily economic momentum. But if I can say which regions we think in the next 24 months are probably going to be the ones that do well, we particularly bearish on Europe as an aggregate, developed Europe in particular, so the likes of Germany and France and Italy. We don't have any positions there. We think valuations aren't factoring in the risks that are there for the European economy and for underlying European businesses. We are quite bullish on not just emerging Asia, but Asia Pacific. So I think our largest active bet from a country perspective is Hong Kong. So we like Hong Kong in that it gives us exposure to specifically the, you know, whilst slowing Chinese economy, it's still growing at above 6% per annum.
We'd love that growth.
We would love that. So it gives you exposure to that market at very discounted prices. I mean, you're talking 10 PEs around there from a through the cycle perspective as well. So we like the type of businesses that are cropping up there. The other market that we like currently is also Japan. We are finding some interesting ideas coming out of there. The likes of India. India is also actually quite interesting. India is nice in that economically it's actually doing well. Mm. And the market itself has pulled back. So, you know, we're finding one or two great opportunities to take advantage of. I think the consensus is that we're moving away from Asia being this big investment-driven economy, specifically China, to more of a consumption-based economy. And you can find businesses that are likely to tap into that theme, but also at pretty decent prices.
Let's talk about decent prices, because obviously if you're buying in rands, it can be tough to really get the most bang for your buck. Obviously, the Indian rupee, the rand, is still stronger than the rupee, but in many countries where there are dollar-based economies, it's tough for investors with rands to get the kind of exposure that they might want. How is that affecting the way you invest? What are the kinds of things you say to rand-based investors?
The lovely currency. If I had to wish for one thing, I'd wish for the ability to call where it's going to go.
Yeah, it's strong at the moment. Well, strong is a strong term, but it's looking relatively all right at the moment. But still, when you're buying big positions offshore, it's not giving you a lot to go on.
Yeah, look, I think the tricky bit from a currency perspective, so I think what your decision has to be to invest offshore has to be a diversification argument. Diversification, not just on a currency perspective, but on the types of businesses that you can get. If you think about, you know, if you're looking at the big tech businesses around the world, that type of economic exposure just doesn't exist in the South African JSE environment. Or those super large pharma businesses. So actually very different types of businesses that you can get exposure to. So that, in our mind, should be the primary driver of your decision. Unfortunately, fundamentals don't always drive where currencies go. People have been talking for the last 30 years about the US with a budget deficit, and that should really mean a weaker dollar. But again, that doesn't necessarily translate into that. So it's particularly difficult for a long-term perspective to decide where the currency is going to go. So we think you should probably then just make the decision on allocating overseas based on other factors rather than the currency.
Can you give us a sense of how your equity portfolios are performing year to date? I mean, I keep hearing these sort of expect low single digit or at most high single digit returns from your equity portfolios over the next year or more. Sure. And investors sort of bracing for a lot lower equity returns. How
sure.
Serious
do you? So, I mean, we've been fortunate in terms of our performance, certainly relative to the benchmark. I think we're up close to 8% in dollar terms year to date compared to a benchmark of roughly 2%. And that's really, as I said, we've been fortunate that our underlying stock picks have come through to the party and have done relatively well.
Is that on your global?
That's on the global side of things. So I certainly think that unless you're taking active bets where you're finding opportunities that are undervalued, global markets as an aggregate aren't necessarily trading at massive discounts. So investors probably have to get used to an environment where, as you said, you know, low or mid single digit returns is going to be the case for some time, especially until underlying global growth reasserts itself. Because if you think about it, how do investors make returns? Either by expanding multiples, so the PE ratio goes from 10 to 16 and the price appreciates, or underlying earnings are doing particularly well. We're in an environment where multiples are stretched and earning growth isn't necessarily going to be that great. So doesn't bode well for massive returns for investors going forward.
And your local equity portfolios, how are those doing?
So for the time being, we just focused on global. That's really our primary focus or singular focus for the time being.
if I can expect low single digit or higher single digit returns on equities and bond yields are offering the same kinds of returns, certainly here in South Africa, not globally. We know that in developed markets, there's even some bonds with negative yields, and yet those bonds are very expensive and in very high demand. Mm. Why would I invest in equities over bonds if the returns are pretty similar and the risk is supposed to be lower when it comes to bonds?
I think the final bit of your comment is the important bit. We have a perception that bonds are lower risk by virtue of what's happened over the last decade or so. Yields, including in South Africa, at some stage have to kick up, which means that it doesn't necessarily bode well for bond prices. So that's a key factor in terms of your asset allocation decision for investors. But I think, you should probably be looking at about on target across both bonds and equities in the current environment. I wouldn't necessarily be overly bullish on either asset class.
All right, we'll leave it there. Tshepo Modiba is Chief Investment Officer at Sariti Asset Management.